Well, what I do is I travel the world visiting startups and R&D labs and other things. I've just come off a world tour where, in the last month, I visited more than 11 countries. And I'm going to talk about how I see the next 5 years playing out, mostly with mixed reality glasses like Microsoft HoloLens or Magic Leap. And then walk back toward today, where I talk about Internet of Things and self-driving cars and virtual reality and wrap it all together a little bit. But I'm just trying to show off the bleeding edge of technology and trying to get entrepreneurs to think about their businesses in new ways, because there's a lot of change coming. And it's either going to disrupt them, like Uber disrupted taxi companies around the world, or they're going to push it, right?
Yeah, that's interesting, because when I was trying to explain to some people who Robert Scovel was, people who are not involved in the tech community, I said he's about a step and a quarter ahead of where everybody else is. And it kind of interested me when you said you're looking ahead 5 years. So yeah. Many futurists are looking ahead 25 and 30 years. And then you've got the people that say, oh, well, we can't even look 18 months ahead. And you've kind of got this really difficult middle ground in there.
Yeah.
But you also have the track record to talk about it. What are a couple of the things that you predicted ahead of the curve that have come to pass? Just so we can sell your credibility to some folks.
Yeah, our last book was titled Naked Conversations, and it explained how your mobile phone was going to use the context of where it was to bring new kinds of services. And today our football stadium has 2,000 beacons and knows where you are full time, and it tells you how to get to the bathroom with the shortest line, right? So 3 years later, we have it in the football stadium. You know, Siri was launched in my son's bedroom. That gives you an idea of some of the things I've seen very early. I was one of the early Twitter users. I was, I think, 79th user of Instagram, and saw that before it was launched. I've seen a lot of the technology that's coming, including the new Siri that's coming from a company called Viv.ai. And talked with them and understood what makes their artificial intelligence different than what's in Siri or what's in Microsoft Cortana or Amazon's Alexa. And, I don't know. What else have I done in my life? I mean, I've seen a lot of things early, like really early. And
when you do these travels, how much do you take back? How much do you learn from the places you're visiting that you're able to take back and inform your opinions of what's happening in the tech valley?
Quite a bit. You know, the world has really flattened in terms of startups, because it's so much cheaper to start a company today than it was 15 years ago. I mean, 15 years ago, you needed to have a data center with a rack of your own computers, you know. And in fact, that's why I used to work at Rackspace. That's why it got its name, Rackspace, right? You were renting space in a rack at Rackspace. Today, you go to Amazon.com, slide your credit card, and now you have a company, right? And you have infrastructure to grow. And so the cloud computing revolution has really, really changed the world. So when I was just in Manchester, UK, and saw a company that's doing machine learning on your living room and letting you take a picture of your living room, and it figures out what the wall is and what your pictures are and what your couch or chairs are, and then lets you redecorate your living room and see what new wallpaper might look like on it, stuff like that, right? In Israel, I saw autonomous drone company, among others. I saw almost 20 companies in a week there. And I saw a company that's using machine learning to do to tell you whether you have cancer or not in an MRI scan, right? And that's pretty interesting. In Illinois, I visited a company that's doing that's growing virtual crops. And I'll talk about that at Sloss Fest. There's this company that has 90 employees, and their job is to grow virtual crops. Explain that one to your mom. You know?
But I thought my mom was already playing Farmville.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's Farmville, and then there's the real thing, which is
you know, talk a little bit about what you're seeing in the VR space. I'm a huge Microsoft fan. I can't wait to one day get my hands on a HoloLens. But you've got the augmented reality sphere. You've got the whole you know, encompassing VR part of this, virtual reality.
What I see is
how soon are these applications really going to start hitting people in the heartland?
Two storms are coming, and the first storm is just hitting the shore, and that's virtual reality. And you really have to sort of separate them, because while they look like they're combined a bit, they're really separate things for a bit. So virtual reality, you're stuck in this headset in blackness, and everything you see is virtual. And that's why we call it virtual reality, right? You're seeing pixels on screens as you move your head around. And that lets you put yourself inside the media, which is hard to explain, and hard to explain why people are so excited by it. But when you actually are in a game or in a movie, you feel things like vertigo, which you never feel on a flat screen, right? And you are in control of where the camera is, right? By looking around, you get to decide where to look. And that really changes the feel of the media. I've seen CEOs cry when they were put inside a refugee camp inside VR because of this intimacy and this immersion. You know, we call it highly immersive media. It's you're in the media and you're part of it, and it's very, very exciting to be a part of that. And VR, the reason I say it's just hitting the shore right now, it's a big storm. It's like a hurricane, and this hurricane has just, you know, started to touch down on land. It's going to be going for years, maybe decades. In fact, I assume decades from now, we're going to be seeing improvements to virtual reality like we see improvements to personal computers today, even though they were invented 40 or so years ago, right?
Yeah, the way I've heard it kind of described is virtual reality takes you to someplace else. Augmented reality lets you do things where you are.
Yeah. That's true, but you know, mixed reality can really mess with your minds. When you play with the HoloLens, yeah, you can play with things on top of the real world, or you can just almost blank out the real world and really it's almost VR. And that's what I'm saying. In 10 years, they're probably going to be the same thing. You're just going to call them up on your glasses and say, "Hey, I want to play, you know, Star Wars today." And then you're going to be watching a virtual reality experience, where, you know, the mixed reality looking at the world, or, you know, "Hey, Siri, help me get to my next meeting." And there's a green line on the floor that tells you, you know, "Follow me."
Yeah, I always see it like it's a transparency setting in Photoshop, where you could have the full immersive VR experience with the goggles on, and then if you want to dial it down just a little bit so that you can see a little bit in front of you, the cameras on the front of the goggles will actually bring you the space that's really there.
And this is the problem. It's a continuum, right? Because even if I'm in the HTC Vive virtual reality headset, there's a camera on the front of that, and it shows me people in my living room as a green outline, so I know when somebody's coming to hit, you know, make fun of me or hit me, right? And so I'm already getting some of that real world into the virtual world. But, you know, when you wear the HoloLens, you're looking through the virtual world into the real world. So it's a quite different experience at today. Now, 10 years from now, we'll see where it goes, but today I separate them. Anyways, mixed reality or the HoloLens kind of thing, the Magic Leap kind of thing, I would say are probably 3 years behind the virtual reality part of things. Virtual reality is coming today for consumers. Augmented reality is just not there for consumers yet. So,
yeah. But one other aspect I wanted to touch on here while I had you has to do with kind of the outlook for communities like Birmingham, you know, away from Silicon Valley, away from Austin, away from Boston, the known tech centers.
Tell me some of the businesses that are located in Birmingham that I might know.
Believe it or not, Saks Fifth Avenue.
Yeah. It's going to be huge for mixed reality, right? Walking around a store and seeing products and collecting them or experiencing them or having, you know, I saw one demo by Aisle 411, which is a new startup, where you aim your phone at the store and Taylor Swift meets you at the front door and goes, "Hey, what are you looking for?"
Oh, and then she writes a song about you.
Yeah, I'm looking for red shoes, you know, and oh, well, let's take you to the shoe department, you know. And there, all of a sudden, there's a line on the floor that takes you to the shoe department. And when you get to the shoe department, she says, "Oh, I love the red Nikes you picked out. I bought those too. But did you know that you can get, you know, a red T-shirt to go with it, or whatever, you know, whatever the shtick is." All that's going to be done, and not just on the mobile, but certainly in the glasses. And there's companies around the world that are doing the input, the databases, the capturing of new products so that you can experience them in virtual and augmented reality and on your phone even. And then there's people who are building the machine learning that that decides which other shoes get shown to you when you click on one, right?
Yeah, I tell you, Birmingham is an awful lot like Pittsburgh. You know, both were old steel towns, and in both cases, the predominant industries here are healthcare and education.
Yeah,
and those are definitely fields where I think you're going to see mixed reality playing a role.
Yeah, no, you know, and what's nice is a lot of people can work for companies over the internet. You know, we don't all need to be in the same place anymore, and you're seeing some companies figure that out. But, you know, if you're an artist, you're going to have work to do. If you're a data scientist, you're certainly going to have work to do. And then if you can build, you know, new companies using sensors or using data, there's a big role for you. And, you know, if there's not a big role, you better figure that out soon and go back to school or something. I mean, Every taxi driver better realize that in 7 to 15 years they're going to be out of a job, and the
truck
industry has to explain why and how. And I that's my job, but we also got to get people to figure out what we're going to do, you know, after the jobs go away because of self-driving cars, you know.
Well, very good. Is there any other piece of wisdom that you would have for communities like Birmingham that want to play a bigger role? What do they need to do to organize around technology jobs? What do they need to do in terms of infrastructure?
That's a big question that I get asked a lot. And the answer is you have to find a way to keep the nerds in your town. In other words, and you know, this isn't just a problem for small town America. You know, if you go to a place like Carnegie Mellon, they have a beautiful, really world-class university there, but they kept losing people to Silicon Valley. People would graduate, you know, with a highly technical degree and then go to Silicon Valley and start a company, right? So many companies have been started by Carnegie Mellon graduates. And now they're working on keeping the nerds in town. And there's a few things you can do. One, you can have tax policy that gets people to stay in town and start businesses. You got to support those businesses with infrastructure. So you better have world-class internet connections. You better have fiber out to the real world, right? So a company can build itself in your community instead of having to move somewhere that there's really world-class connectivity. You have to have something for your workers to do, particularly young workers, who are graduating from college, right? If you're going to hire new talent that's coming out of, you know, a Carnegie Mellon or an MIT or a Virginia Tech or a Waterloo or something like that, you better have something for those kids to do. And so if you go to Illinois, they rebuilt their college town, and the whole downtown now has lots of nightclubs and restaurants and music bars to go and have something to do in the evening. Because if there's nothing to do, then you move your company to somewhere that there's more fun to have. You know? So that's a few things. Tax policy, infrastructure, and nightclubs.
Be a nerd magnet.
Yeah, you know, keep the nerds from leaving. Find out what makes the nerds tick and keep them from leaving.
Well, you know, I think it helps when you bring a Robert Scoble or a Gary Vaynerchuk to town to let the nerds know that they can see you here.
That helps. The other really big part is capital has to be willing to take risks on weird businesses that the world doesn't yet understand. I just visited this company called Altspace VR. They got $16 million to start a social VR company. And keep in mind, there's no headsets in the world, really. I mean, Samsung has sold a million headsets, right? But they got their money before Samsung even sold the million headsets. There's no distribution. There's no customer base. Yet they got $16 million. Why? Because Silicon Valley understands, oh, we have to take a risk with this money, and we have to bet on an entrepreneur who has a big idea in a new market that might show up. Now, it might not. Maybe I'm totally wrong. Maybe that investor is totally wrong, and maybe the entrepreneur is too early, and the market doesn't show up, and nothing works. And in 6 years, they're gone. But that's why Silicon Valley is still attractive to geeks from around the world, right? To these rocket scientists. In fact, the guy who started this company is literally a rocket scientist. So, you know,
yeah, those tax policy implications are pretty big too. But you know, when we have people talking about raising capital gains taxes again, that could have a huge chilling effect on those guys who make those big flyer bets.
Absolutely, you know. If you want your economy to bloom, get your rich people to spend their money. You know? Put it back in the economy. Start some companies, you know, and start some weird companies that are going to keep the nerds from leaving town. But that's a tough one, you know. It's a tough one, and very few communities around the world can do it, you know.